We're back here in the morning show in WFYL, 1180 AM. We're privileged to have on the line Representative Russ Diamond from the Lebanon area, Pennsylvania. And Representative Diamond, can you hear us?
Sure can. Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Hi, Russ. This is Susan Locke.
Hi, Susan.
We're privileged to have you, and we welcome you. Why did you get involved with politics, Russ?
About 10 years ago, I think it was 2003, 2004, something like that, I started to just see signs of a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse in various levels of government. So I thought, you know, I'm in a position where, unlike my friends who all have families and mortgages and that sort of thing, I had some time to be able to try to get to do something about that fraud, waste, and abuse. So I ran for state house in 2004 and lost. And then after that, about a year after that, that's when that midnight pay raise happened in Harrisburg, and I got involved in that effort as well.
Many people might not remember that. What was Pennsylvania Clean Sweep, and tell us why you started it?
Well, I think folks do remember that pay raise in the middle of the night that the legislature gave itself in 2005. I formed the group PA Clean Sweep in order to challenge that or to protest that. And what I did, along with some others, we went across the state. We recruited 113 candidates for the legislature. And you might remember that the 2006 elections following that pay raise, they were pretty historic. About 24% of the legislature got turned over. I think it was 55 legislators were replaced altogether. Along the way, we convinced Pennsylvanians to not retain a Supreme Court justice for the very first time. And you know, the good news was that shortly, 4 months. Four short months after they enacted their pay raise, they repealed it. So it was really a confirmation that if enough people get upset about something, you can change the direction of government from a citizen's point of view. It was very encouraging.
Very encouraging. I commend you for your efforts there. And on behalf of our viewers, listeners, we basically hope more people get involved. You've actually shown us a path, a light, that what is possible when concerned citizens not only follow events but act on them.
And I think one of the important things, one of the most important lessons to come out of that whole situation was that it was not just people on it wasn't just Republicans who were upset. It was a very bipartisan effort to protest that pay raise and to get it repealed. People came together from all sorts, all sides of the political spectrum. In commonality, they put their differences aside and said, we're just going to fight on this one thing. And it's amazing what can happen when people put their differences aside and focus on the commonality.
That's great.
That's really outstanding. It lays out a plan on how to make future changes for the better of everybody, not just Democrats, Republicans, but independents and mostly our children. Yes, sir.
Right. Yeah. And you know, going forward from that, I do have to say that the Pennsylvania legislature has, for the most part, cleaned up its act, and it's better run today than it was 10 years ago. We don't have strong arm politicians who are like, you know, one guy wielding the sword. It is more of a deliberative body now. The process is a lot more transparent. So those are some of the other things that came out of that entire effort.
Excellent. I got a list of talking points here. The next one is, now that you finally won an elective office, is your political outlet any different?
Is my political outlook any different? It is different because once you become an elected servant, you do see things a little bit differently. You see the inner workings of the system, the inside of the sausage factory, shall we say, and you get to understand why things. I mean, when you're on the outside, you expect change. You want it now, and you can't understand why it takes so long. Well, when you're in a deliberative body that has 203 members, you have to understand that your voice is only one half of 1% of that deliberative body. And then you have to collaborate with another deliberative body. So that reduces your ability on your own to change things instantly by leaps and bounds. And then, of course, then you have to, you know, once that you work with the Senate, then you have to work with the governor as well. So there's a lot of voices, a lot of things have to happen before a good idea can become the law of the land.
Well, that certainly sheds some light and makes everybody understand how hard it is to change things, but I commend you for starting.
Well, we're going to try. I mean, again, like I said, I am less than one half of 1% of the voice of the House of Representatives of Pennsylvania. And my job, I guess, is to try to make the voice of the people of my district just a little bit louder than everybody else's and maybe be a force for change rather than somebody who's just standing on the sidelines going along with what everybody else is going to do.
We commend you for doing that. Another question I have is, you've run for office many times in the past 10 years and lost. What made you keep trying?
Well, I kept trying because, you know, the very same reasons that I got involved. I still saw waste, fraud, and abuse of public monies. And I'm still in the position of advantage over my friends and my family in that I still don't have any kids. You know, I don't have to worry about the bills like everybody else does. And so I'm still in that position where I can dedicate the time to a full-time effort into making Pennsylvania a better place to work, live, and play. So because I'm still in that position, I just kept trying. And, hey, you know what? Lightning struck this time.
Well, I'm glad it did personally, and wish you many years trying to make things better for the people
Thank
of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
You made property taxes your top issue during your campaign. Give us a brief overview of your take on this issue.
Well, I think property taxes, a lot of people focus on the dollar figures behind property tax. I think property taxes in Pennsylvania, for me, it's a freedom issue. Pennsylvania's Constitution guarantees our inherent right to acquire, possess, and defend property. If you have to pay a tax as a prerequisite to exercise an inherent right, it's no longer an inherent right, is it? It's now a privilege. We would absolutely positively scream at the top of our lungs if we went to vote on election day and somebody said, well, you have to pay a tax before you vote. No, it's your right to vote. Or we would scream at the top of our lungs if somebody said, you can't attend church this weekend because you didn't pay your annual county worship tax. That's what I believe. Property rights are just as inherent as the freedom of speech, the right to worship, the right to a jury trial. And to make taxation a prerequisite of exercising any of those rights, I believe is absolutely wrong. And it's very contrary to the ideals that Pennsylvania was started out on. Our property rights are inherent, and we need to protect them. And I believe that property taxes should be absolutely positively eliminated, all forms of property taxes in Pennsylvania. Yes, there will be a discussion about how do you fund this, how do you fund that. But first, I think in Pennsylvania we have to agree that we're not going to violate people's rights and take them away simply because they can't afford to pay tribute to the government.
Russ, do you find others who agree with you? Do you think there's support to actually do something about this?
There is a lot of support in Harrisburg for eliminating property taxes. In fact, on the Republican side of the aisle, we've got 22 new members who got elected the same time I did. And I'm going to guess that either 19 or 20 of them all got elected to do something about property taxes. It's their top issue. And I will say that we've had a series, I'm not going to call it a task force because it's not a task force per se, but we have had a number of meetings within the Republican caucus, and we are seriously hoping to get something, some sort of consensus on what to do about property taxes and bring it up for a vote sometime this spring. I'm really looking forward to getting that done.
for those who would say, again, everyone, we're speaking with Representative Russ Diamond from the Lebanon area here on 1180 WFYL. For those who would say, well, then where is the money going to come from for the funding necessary? What do you say?
What I say is I am open to every idea that does not infringe on anyone's inherent rights. I think that is a discussion that needs to be had. We're having some of those discussions. But for me personally, I think we first have to decide, do we want to tax property anymore or not? Because once you get into the A's, B's, and C's of how you're going to replace the funding, then you're going to get people who oppose getting rid of property taxes simply because they oppose the quote-unquote revenue replacement stream. I think it's a better idea first to come together as Pennsylvanians and agree that we're not going to tax property anymore.
Mm-hmm. What other issues will you be focusing on in Harrisburg besides the property taxes?
Well, I think one of our biggest issues right now immediately before us is Pennsylvania's we have a budget crisis in Pennsylvania. It looks like, according to the new Wolf administration, it looks like we have a $2.3 billion structural deficit in Pennsylvania. In other words, we're spending $2.3 billion more than we're taking in. That's not a good thing. Unless you want to go out and borrow money, and borrowing money is not a good idea. So we have to figure out what we're going to do as far as, I mean, I support making cuts in order to balance the budget. Other people are going to say, well, we support raising taxes. I don't think Pennsylvanians need another tax increase. I really don't. On top of that, we have an
We're going to have to take a break here, Russ. If you'll stay with us, we'll have you back right after the break. Thank you.
Okay.
Patriots. When a man assumes a public trust, he should consider himself as public property. Thomas Jefferson.
Hello, this is Paul Fisher, headmaster of Coventry Christian School in Pottstown. I am so pleased that WFYL is a growing part of our community, serving as a voice of reason and a defender of and proponent for all that has made and will make America a great nation. There simply are not enough competing voices and ideas in the media, and we are proud to partner with WFYL in working for your liberty and things that truly matter. Advertising on WFYL has served us well and opened doors of opportunity for expanding our mission in classical Christian education, and the good people at the station have been so kind to help us network as well. I hope you will faithfully tune in to WFYL, share this station with others, and consider how a partnership with your organization or business could strengthen our community and build a stronger America.
Hello, this is Bob Levins, pastor of True North Christian Church, offering up a prayer for America. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you on behalf of our nation that so desperately needs you. Today we are facing challenges from all directions. The strength of our nation has never been our military might or our financial capacity, but our humility before you. And as we have honored you, we have been blessed. However, today so many have rejected the truth of your word and your grace. This day I pray that you will awaken us by your Holy Spirit. I would ask that you would open our eyes once again to cause us to honor you, not with words alone, but by deeds and humble hearts. Send a wave of revival across this land that reminds us once again of who you are, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. I ask this, our Heavenly Father, in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. We're speaking with Representative Russell Diamond, and basically represents a district out in Lebanon. And welcome to our show. Maybe you, I know I cut you off mid-sentence there, so could you continue?
Sure. I mean, I was talking about the $2.3 billion structural deficit we have in our budget. On top of that, there is growing concern about Pennsylvania's increasingly alarming pension crisis. And that's the state pensions for state employees and school teachers, SIRS and PSIRS. Pennsylvania's obligation to pay into those funds this year was $2.8 billion. In the coming year, it'll be $3.3 billion. And the year after that, it will be, I think, $3.9 billion. So on top of that structural deficit of $2.3 billion, we also have to increase spend or just our investment in that pension plan another half a billion dollars this year. So you're really looking at a $3 billion deficit structurally in Pennsylvania. And we have to figure out a way to make those numbers add up because in Pennsylvania, we have to balance the budget. Now, I know that the Wolf administration, they're going to come in, they're going to say, we're going to increase this tax, we're going to apply this new tax, that sort of thing. I think as Republicans, we have to fight against that notion. We probably would be better off looking for a discretionary spending that we can cut instead to balance the budget.
Interesting. You mentioned the obvious with the new Democratic governor, Wolf, and a heavily Republican legislature. Mm-hmm. How do you think this year's budget process will shake out?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch. Now, everybody has to remember, usually we get a budget address from a governor in February, but because this is his first year, we're going to be waiting until March to hear what his budget plans are. So it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out. And you're right, it is a heavily Republican legislature on both sides of the Capitol, both the Senate and the House are not only more Republican, the leadership appears to be more conservative than in prior years. So it'll be interesting to see how this dynamic plays out with a Democrat governor in charge. Now, I don't think I'm hopeful that Tom Wolf is not as big as an ideologue as maybe Ed Rendell was. And you remember some of those budget hassles from past years. I think he may be more pragmatic, more business-like, business-minded. Than his Democratic predecessor, Ed Rendell. But, again, he's throwing out those ideas of higher taxes, more taxes, new taxes. And it'll be interesting to watch how that shakes out between the legislature and the new governor.
It certainly will. Another question I have here for you is, you were once the General Assembly's biggest critic. Are you getting any blowback as a result of that?
No, actually, I'm not. I want to tell you, I was the General Assembly's biggest critic 10 years ago, and rightfully so. I think the criticism was justified, and quite frankly, the legislature has changed a bit since then. A lot of people who were in the legislature then have since retired or gone on to, you know, other private endeavors. Some of the people who were there now, who were there then, they all have said, you know, this place has changed. This place has become better in the last 10 years. And frankly, I'm getting a very warm welcome. It's a very collegial atmosphere, and no one has shown me any open hostility up there.
Excellent. That's what we expect from our representatives, and I'm glad that's the case.
Yeah. It's a very, very professional atmosphere, but it's also very collegial. I mean, I've made a lot of new friends since November, and I'm really looking forward to working with all the good people in Harrisburg.
That partially answers my next question. Do you like your new job?
Oh, yeah, I do. I really do like my new job. But I think the thing I like the most is getting to meet some of my colleagues from different areas of the state. I mean, I know because I've crisscrossed the state a couple times on different campaigns, but Pennsylvania is an extremely diverse place. We have, I think we have about seven or eight different kind of regions in Pennsylvania that all have different ideals, different cultures, and I just love getting to meet my colleagues and finding out where they came from, finding out what their motivations are, why they're in Harrisburg, what their goals are. Pennsylvania is a fascinating place. It's a very diverse place, and I just love immersing myself in meeting the different people from different areas of the Commonwealth. And on the home side, I mean, when I'm back in the district office and I'm interacting with my constituents, I love that too because I get to know better what they want. And I always encourage my constituents, don't wait for me to contact you. Call my office. You have something on your mind, call my office because I can't represent you unless you tell me what you want.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Russ. Do you think that the energy, the technology and the energy industry will help out this deficit in the budget?
I think it is. I think it's already helping out the budget deficit in that it has created a lot of jobs and it has put a lot of people to work, so that they're going out and they're spending money in the economy and they're paying taxes and that sort of thing. I think what a lot of people want to talk about is probably a severance tax on Marcellus Shale. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know that Governor Wolf is suggesting that, and there's murmuring going on about that in the legislature. Whether that's going to happen or not, I'm not sure yet. But I think it's important to remember that Pennsylvania, a lot of people say, well, Pennsylvania is the only state without a severance tax on extracting natural gas. And that is true. But Pennsylvania also is the only state that assesses an impact fee before you can even drill a well.
Right.
And those fees... 60% of those fees are kept local, and that's very important to remember because that goes to fixing the roads that these trucks are driving on, that sort of thing, and taking care of the local infrastructure, and that's why it's called an impact fee. If we replace that with a statewide severance tax, and I don't care how much it would be, that would be all money that goes to Harrisburg and would end up getting spent politically. And we know when Harrisburg gets to spend big pots of money politically, it never gets spent properly. Right. So I'm very concerned that anything we do about taxing the extraction of natural gas or drilling wells, that sort of thing, that money is retained locally so that those local economies can benefit and those local governments can fix those roads, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always said that cheap energy is the keystone of our manufacturing base. I remember here in Philadelphia area, the GE plant closed. It was six stories high, about a block, huge plant. And mm-hmm. the men were out there, I'm talking about gray hair and everything, weeping because the electrical rates, Philadelphia electrical rates, were so high, which is mostly due to energy. So
right.
I commend you in any efforts you might have.
Actually, you know, on the energy front, one of the biggest things, and maybe you folks aren't dealing with it so much in your area, but here, I'm located in between where the gas is and where you folks are. So one of the big things we're dealing with right now is the pipelines that are being planned to come through our areas and to deliver that gas down to folks like you, where you can either, you know, refine it further or fuel those factories and sort of thing. So that's something that maybe folks down your way aren't aware of that we're dealing with in our local area, is the right of ways, you know, the impact, the environmental impact those pipelines might have, the safety concerns, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. We have about a minute left on our this segment. Is there anything that you'd like to summarize and present to our audience? We really appreciate having you on. This is Representative Russ Diamond, a longtime advocate of better government, and we really appreciate your efforts. You follow on a proud line of Benjamin Franklin and the rest of the great Pennsylvanians that founded this country, and wish you success and keep at it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. And I remind all your listeners, you know, if you have concerns about government, call your local representative.
Good advice.
Call them and talk to them. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you so much.
All right.
God bless.
You folks have a good day now. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
That was Representative Russ Diamond. He's one of our representatives up in Harrisburg. He's a longtime advocate. He ran for office repeatedly. And basically, as a result of his efforts, things have gotten better. So we're going to go back to the break.
Educate you on all the tools that are at your disposal. You see, if I can help educate you, you'll make informed decisions that will truly help you to have the retirement that you've worked so hard for all these years.
So tune in Mike Darrell and the Bull, putting your financial house in order, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on WFYL, 1180 AM.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. The FBI investigation of the police shooting in Ferguson, Missouri is complete. There were protests and riots after Officer Darren Wilson was not indicted for shooting Michael Brown.
Sources indicate the Department of Justice is, quote, unlikely to move forward with civil rights charges against Wilson. A separate Justice Department investigation into the practices of the Ferguson Police Department remains open. It's examining potential racial bias among officers.
Fox's Patricia Stark. 70 measles cases now linked to two Disney theme parks in California.
You're contagious for about 4 days before you have the rash and at least 4 days afterwards.
Dr. James Cherry at UCLA recommends revaccination for adults.
There's no risk particularly with that. If you had documented measles, you're protected for life.
People who've not been vaccinated are advised to avoid Disneyland and Disney California Adventure. Fox News, we report, you decide.
The Pope is going to attend the World Meeting of Families 2015, Philadelphia, on September 21st, 2015. 1.5 million people are expected to attend the Papal Mass on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway on September 27th, 2015 in Philadelphia. Go to worldmeeting2015.org for further information. Since only 6,000 rooms are available in Philadelphia and 15,000 are expected to register, people are making rooms available in their homes for the overflow. 10,000 Philadelphia volunteers are needed. Note Milan, Italy, had 5,000. Once again, register as a volunteer or to provide a room for a visitor at worldmeeting2015.org. Note, there is a daycare and youth congress. Presentations on the history of the Bible and other topics will be presented at this meeting of families 2015 in Philadelphia. This is the first time the new Pope will visit the United States, and we are honored he selected Philadelphia as the first city to be visited. Go to worldmeeting2015.org for more information on this conference, whose slogan is, Love is Our Mission.
It's a brand new year, a time for doing things a new way. What worked last year won't work this year. You have to do more to keep moving forward to get to that next level. WFYL is launching a new program, Accelerating Your Business, every Thursday morning from 7:34 to 8 a.m. to help you do just that. Hosted by me, Michelle Faustin, a growth strategy, market entry, and business expansion expert, and president and CEO of MJF Strategy, Accelerating Your Business will be a call-in radio show where you ask questions and get the answers you need to grow your business the right way and take it to the next level. Whether you desire to enter a new market, expand into an existing one, whether your business is stagnating and you want to break out, experience incremental growth in the past and are ready to make a big jump in revenue, or are growing rapidly but need help in managing that growth to ensure that your infrastructure can handle it and that you don't bust at the seams, overexpand, or lose out on profitability, then this is the show for you. For a chance to have your questions aired and answered on our show's premiere, email me at askmichelle@1180wfyl.com. That's askmichelle@1180wfyl.com. And that's Accelerating Your Business, airing every Thursday morning from 7:34 to 8 a.m. starting February 5th on WFYL. I'm excited to help you grow your business.
Good morning, everyone. This is Susan Locke.
This is Al Locke.
And we're filling in for the New Day team this morning here on 1180wfyl.com. Earlier this morning, we played, a few of the excerpts from The Black-Robed Regiment, a DVD by Reverend Dan Fisher. And we'll be playing a little bit more of that in just a few minutes. But I found a quote here from Noah Webster. Noah Webster is best known for the dictionary which bears his name, a colossal 26-year project published in 1828. He also wrote A History of the United States, and he stated in that, "The religion which has introduced civil liberty is the religion of Christ and his apostles, which enjoins humility, piety, and benevolence, which acknowledges in every person a brother or a sister and a citizen with equal rights. This is genuine Christianity, and to this we owe our free constitutions of government." I think that that's a good background quote to hear a little bit more of the Black-Robed Regiment segments.
Another great example of a Black-Robed Regiment preacher is Reverend James Caldwell. James Caldwell was the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in Elizabethtown, New Jersey. He was also a chaplain to the Continental Army and a soldier himself, which earned him the great hatred of the British. They called him the rebel priest and the high priest of the rebellion. Now, Caldwell was a flamboyant preacher. For example, on Sundays when he would climb into his pulpit, he would carry a couple of pistols like this. He would pull them out of his belt, place them on the pulpit, leave them there the entire time that he preached. When he was finished with his sermon, he'd pick up the pistols, hook them back into his belt, walk to the back of the church and shake hands with his congregation as they left. Unfortunately, his wife was killed when a British soldier shot through their house. And after doing his wife's funeral, he left their children in care of some of the townsfolk. And because the war had moved to Springfield, New Jersey, he quickly rode there. When he reached Springfield, he discovered that the Continental soldiers were running out of wadding for their muskets. Of course, that would render their muskets useless. And so Caldwell jumped on his horse and rode down to the First Presbyterian Church of Springfield, New Jersey, and he gathered up two armloads of hymn books. Now, a very famous hymn writer in those days was Isaac Watts. And so as Caldwell rode back to his troops carrying those hymn books, he started throwing them to his soldiers, yelling for them to tear out the pages and use the hymns for wadding. And as he did so, he yelled out, "Give them Watts, boys, give them Watts." And that's where the very famous saying comes from that we use today, "Give them what for." Unfortunately, Caldwell, like many of the patriot preachers of that day, paid the ultimate price for liberty. A year later, he was killed by a British assassin. Because of the enormous influence that preachers like Muhlenberg and Caldwell had on encouraging and organizing the colonists to fight, the British blamed them with the war. They placed particular blame on the Presbyterian preachers because the Presbyterians were some of the more fiery preachers of that day. King George III called the American Revolution a Presbyterian rebellion. Horace Walpole said to Parliament, "There is no use crying about it. Cousin America has eloped with a Presbyterian parson." An ardent colonial supporter of King George III wrote home, and in his letter he said, "I fix all the blame for these extraordinary proceedings upon the Presbyterians. They have been the chief and principal instruments in all these flaming measures." A Hessian captain in 1778, in writing home, said, "Call this war by whatever name you may, it is nothing more or less than a Presbyterian rebellion." The historian George Bancroft said, "The revolution of 1776, so far as it was affected by religion, was a Presbyterian measure." The sermons of the Black Regiment fanned the flames of patriotism in the hearts of their congregants, and their efforts produced an army of patriots who were willing to fight for liberty and independence from the British crown. The British considered the American preachers who advocated for independence a greater threat than the Continental Army itself. They believed these preachers were the primary cause of the war. It was the British sympathizer, Peter Oliver, who first used the title Black-Robed Regiment. The title stuck, and these pastors proudly wore the title as a badge of courage as they led their people into the fight. As many historians have observed, the Black-Robed Regiment was truly the soul of American independence. Historian Alice Baldwin wrote in 1918, "The Constitutional Convention and the written Constitution were the children of the pulpit." A magazine, the American Quarterly Register, wrote in 1833, "As a body of men, the clergy were preeminent in their attachment to liberty. The pulpits of the land rang with the notes of freedom." A British periodical in 1856 wrote, "If Christian ministers had not preached and prayed, there might have been no revolution as yet, or had it broken out, it might have been crushed." Historian B.F. Morris wrote in 1864, "The ministers of the revolution were, like their Puritan predecessors, bold and fearless in the cause of their country.
No class of men contributed more to carry forward the revolution and to achieve our independence than did the ministers. By their prayers, patriotic sermons, and services, they rendered the highest assistance to the civil government, the army, and the country. Historian Clinton Rossiter wrote in 1953, "Had ministers been the only spokesman of the rebellion, had Jefferson, the Adamses, and James Otis never appeared in print, the political thought of the revolution would have followed almost exactly the same line. In the sermons of the patriotic ministers, we find expressed every possible refinement of the reigning political faith." Now, understanding the vital role that these patriot pastors played in securing the liberties of the colonists, the founding fathers encouraged them to speak out loudly and boldly. John Adams said, "It is the duty of the clergy to accommodate their discourses to the times, to preach against such sins as are most prevalent, and recommend such virtues as are most wanted. If public spirit is much wanted, should they not inculcate this great virtue?" As the Black Robe Regiment took its stand, Adams rejoiced by claiming, "The pulpits have thundered." Most of us have heard of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on April the 18th, 1775. He rode through the streets of Lexington, Massachusetts, yelling, "The British are coming! The British are coming!" But most people don't even know where he was headed. He was actually headed to the home of Jonas Clark. Jonas Clark was a pastor in Lexington, and that night he had two special guests in his home, Samuel Adams and John Hancock. In fact, the British were most probably marching on Lexington to capture these two men as treasured prisoners of war. Well, as Revere rode up into the front yard of Jonas Clark, Adams, Hancock, and Clark walked outside, and Revere gave them the news. Well, Samuel Adams and John Hancock looked at Pastor Clark and said, "Well, Pastor, will the men fight?" The men? Who were the men? Well, you see, on Sunday afternoons after church, Jonas Clark and a deacon by the name of John Parker, who was himself a veteran of the French Indian War, had been training the men of their congregation how to fight as a military unit, because they feared that the British might invade. So the men that Adams and Hancock were talking about were the famous Minutemen of Lexington. You see, most people don't even know that the Minutemen were trained by a pastor, Jonas Clark, and a deacon, John Parker. Well, when Adams and Hancock asked Pastor Clark, "Will the men fight?" Jonas Clark responded, "I trained them for this very hour. They would fight, and if need be, die too, under the shadow of the house of God." Well, the very next morning, April the 19th, 1775, Pastor Jonas Clark, Deacon John Parker, led those citizen soldiers out to face the British. In fact, there is a stone today that marks the spot where Captain John Parker said to those Lexington Minutemen, "Stand your ground. Don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to have a war, let it begin here." Well, as the British approached the Minutemen, their commander called out and said, "Throw down your arms in the name of the King of England." These Lexington Minutemen yelled out, "We recognize no sovereign but God and no king but Jesus." And then a shot was fired. The shot we now call the one heard around the world. And the fight was on. Not only the battle, but the war for American independence. When the smoke had cleared, 49 colonists had been killed.
That's history. That's history that you probably haven't heard except here or a couple other places. Reverend Dan Fisher from Oklahoma basically put together a DVD. Here's two quotes. "The most powerful form of lie is an omission." That's by George Orwell. "The most powerful form of lie is an omission." Who knew that the Minutemen were led by their pastor at the church. George Abraham Lincoln said, if the American people know the truth, they will do the right thing. Abraham Lincoln, one of our greatest presidents. If the American people know the truth, they will do the right thing. We hope to give you the truth here at WFYL.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. I've got some great news to report on a court case, a tremendous victory for our Independence Law Center. Nearly 3 years ago, a Christian men's group in the Philadelphia area was sued by the owners of a strip club for hurting their business. The group, called the Kingsmen, regularly prayed and protested outside the sex club and tried to help their customers escape from the addiction to pornography. Well, the Kingsmen contacted Randy Wenger, chief counsel of our Independence Law Center, and we offered to defend them in court. Well, last week the trial was set to begin, and as Randy and his great team of allied attorneys, including Jeff Conrad and Emily Bell, entered the courtroom, the attorneys for the strip club asked if they could settle the case and agreed to drop all charges in the lawsuit. Now the Kingsmen can continue to stand against these sex clubs and help lead people out of bondage and into freedom in Christ.
Hi, this is Mark Sizek, your host on This Is My Word, each Sunday at 8:05 a.m. Our speaker is Dan Peters, senior pastor at Limerick Chapel and author of the new book, 16 Counseling Sessions with the Wonderful Counselor. Join us each Sunday morning at 8:05 a.m. for a 25-minute Bible study with Dan Peters from Limerick Chapel, right here on WFYL 1180 a.m.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, one of the many voices of News Talk 1180 WFYL AM on your radio dial, streaming worldwide online 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a WFYL advertiser. We provide quality programming with local and national hosts, expert political commentators who cover a wide variety of topics about local and national issues of the day. If you'd like to attract more business, more clients, or more customers, try advertising with us. Write to us, info@1180WFYL.com, or call us at the station, 610-539-1783. That's 610-539-1783, or by email at info@1180WFYL.com. Find out more about us and listen online anytime at 1180WFYL.com. King of Prussia, Philadelphia. To protect freedom of speech, God bless America.
My name is Laurie Kane. I'm a Christian career coach. I help people create a more fulfilling professional life by following God's purpose for their life. I help people to unleash their God-given strengths, talents, and passion. I'm offering a free 45-minute coaching session to kick off the journey. So let's get started today to make 2015 your best year ever. Give me a call at 267-640-5094. That's 267-640-5094.
We're back here at WFYL, 1180 AM on your dial. We're going to play a speech given on the floor of the House of Representatives on January 14th by Speaker Boehner. Right before that, I'm going to reemphasize what we closed the last segment with. The most powerful form of lie is an omission, George Orwell. And Abraham Lincoln said, if the American people know the truth, they will do what is the right thing. You have to hear all the news. And this, for whatever reason, mainstream media didn't play the speaker's speech, and I think it's worthy of playing, and here it is.
Let me thank my colleague for yielding, and let me thank all of my who've worked to put this bill together. Today I rise, and the House rises, to support and defend our Constitution. We do not take this action lightly, but simply, there is no alternative. This is not a dispute between the parties or even between the branches of our government. This executive overreach is an affront to the rule of law and to the Constitution itself. I appreciate all the efforts of those working to fix our broken immigration system, especially since I'm one of them. What we're dealing with is a president who has ignored the people, has ignored the Constitution, and even his own past statements. In fact, on at least 22 occasions, he said he did not have the authority to do what he has done. Before he became president, on March 31st, 2008, the president said, and I quote, "I take the Constitution very seriously. The biggest problems that we're facing right now have to do with the president trying to not go through Congress at all. And that's what I intend to reverse when I'm president." On May 19th, 2008, the president said, and I quote, "I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States." Then after he was president, on May 5th, 2010, the president said, and I quote, "Anybody who tells you that I can wave a magic wand and make it happen hasn't been paying attention to how this town works." On July the 1st, 2010, the president said, and I quote, "There are those who have argued passionately that we should at least ignore the laws on the books. I believe such an indiscriminate approach would be both unwise and unfair." On October 14th, 2010, the president said, and I quote, "I do have an obligation to make sure that I'm following some of the rules. I can't simply ignore the laws that are out there." On October 25th, 2010, the president said, and I quote, "I am president. I am not king. I can't do these things just by myself. I can't just make up the laws by myself." On March 28th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "America is a nation of laws, which means that I, as president, am obligated to enforce the law." On April 20th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "I can't solve this problem by myself. I just can't do it by myself." On April 29th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "Some here wish I could just bypass Congress and change the law myself. But that's not how democracy works." On May the 10th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "They wish I could just bypass Congress and change the law myself, but that's not how democracy works." On July 25th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "The idea of doing these things on my own is very tempting, but that's not how our system works. That's not how our democracy functions. That's not how our Constitution is written." On September 28th, 2011, the president said, and I quote, "We live in a democracy. You have to pass bills through the legislature, then I can sign them." On September 20th, 2012, the president said, and I quote, "What I've always said is that as head of the executive branch, there's a limit to what I can do." On October 16th, 2012, the president said, and I quote, "We're a nation of laws, and I've done everything I can on my own." On January 30th, 2013, the president said, and I quote, "I am not a king. I'm head of the executive branch. I'm required to follow the law." On January 30th, 2013, the president also said, and I quote, "I'm not a king. You know, my job as head of the executive branch is ultimately to carry out the law." On February 14th, 2013, the president said, and I quote, "The problem is that I'm the president of the United States. I'm not the emperor of the United States." July 16th, 2013, the president said, and I quote, "I think that it's very important for us to recognize that the way to solve this problem has to be legislative." On September 17th, 2013, the president said, and I quote, "My job in the executive branch is supposed to be to carry out the laws that are passed. But if we start broadening that, then essentially I would be ignoring the law. On November 25th, 2013, the president said, and I quote, "The easy way out is to try to yell and pretend I can do something by violating our laws. That's not our tradition." On March the 6th, 2014, the president said, and I quote, "I cannot ignore those laws any more than I could ignore any other of the laws on our books." And on August the 6th, 2014, the president said, and I quote, "I am bound by the Constitution. I am bound by the separation of powers." To think that the president of the United States actually studied constitutional law is one thing. He didn't just teach or learn constitutional law, he taught it as well. But now his actions suggest that he's forgotten what these words even mean. Enough is enough. By their votes last November, the people made clear that they wanted more accountability from this president. And by our votes here today, we will heed their will, and we will keep our oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America.
Well, that was Speaker Boehner. I doubt whether you've ever heard that in any other place except the Internet. You can go to the Internet and look it up. It's readily available on Breitbart, for one. This is a powerful, powerful speech. And basically, by not putting this speech out to the people, you, our listeners, and others, they're depriving you of the information you need to make a good decision. Now, some say that any other president would be impeached given this violation. I say we are in a constitutional crisis, and if President Obama isn't impeached, not only have has our Constitution been violated, but it's establishing two classes of people, because Nixon was impeached for far less. And this is unacceptable, one class having lesser rights and one with more rights. So we need, are we on the way to becoming slaves? Heaven forbid, impeach Obama for all our children's sake so that they have a constitution in the years ahead.
You've been listening to the morning program here on 1180 WFYL. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.